In Northwest News from KPLU, when does posting on a social media site go beyond free speech to become a hate crime? That's one of the questions that comes up when you talk about Washington's hate crime statute. This is the law that a suspended Western Washington University student has been charged with, and it's what two high schoolers in Edmonds were recently arrested for. In all of these cases, the perpetrators allegedly posted racist threats online. KPLU Law and Justice reporter Paula Whistle decided to take a look at the history of the state's hate crime law and its evolution.
Tyson Campbell?
In a Whatcom County courtroom, Tyson Campbell stands silently next to his attorney as a not guilty plea is entered. If found guilty, Campbell could spend up to 5 years in prison. He allegedly wrote, "Let's lynch her," and other incendiary comments about the student body president, who's African-American, on the anonymous social media site Yik Yak. Even before charges were brought, Western Washington University had already suspended Campbell and banned him from campus, an indication of how serious schools, prosecutors, and really broader society now view anything labeled a hate crime. Washington was actually one of the earliest states in the country to enact what came to be called hate crime laws. It was in the early 1980s, and lawmakers were reacting to this.
White power!
White power!
Neo-Nazi groups were moving in, particularly into northern Idaho. You can hear them in this TV documentary. David Nywert writes for the Southern Poverty Law Center blog Hate Watch and has followed the white supremacist movement since the late 1970s when he was editor of a northern Idaho newspaper. He says at the time, neo-Nazis were starting to organize throughout the Pacific Northwest.
And that organizing manifested itself in the form of really a wave of hate crimes that hit the Spokane area. And we saw it over here in Western Washington as well.
Nywert says there were firebombings, attacks on mixed-race couples, and instances of swastikas being painted on synagogues. The leader of the neo-Nazi group The Order, which was based in the Seattle area, got his start then. The group would go on to commit some of the movement's most notorious crimes.
They robbed, 25, 26 banks and armored cars and killed a radio talk show host in Denver.
Later, the leader of that group, Robert Matthews, was killed in a fiery shootout with federal agents on Whidbey Island. In the early 80s, with the white supremacist movement starting to take hold, Nywert says people saw a need to recognize that, for example, spray painting a swastika on a synagogue was different than just regular graffiti, or attacking someone because of the color of their skin was more than an assault.
The laws on the books weren't adequate to deal with the added level of harm that these kinds of crimes cause.
Washington's hate crime statute, on the books as felony malicious harassment, passed in 1981. It added penalties to charges when the attack was because of the victim's race, religion, or national heritage. Later, gender, sexual orientation, and disability were added. Vicki Monroe is a research director at the University of Minnesota. She co-authored a book about hate crime laws. She says there hasn't always been universal support. She says some say it doesn't make sense to enhance charges for something that's already a crime.
You know, murder is murder, and it doesn't really matter what the reason for it is, that this group or that group shouldn't be privileged, just because of who they are.
On the other hand, she says the majority opinion, and most states now have these laws, is that there is a need for them.
It's sort of like terrorism when you categorize a whole group as somebody, you know, at the mercy of your rage or hatred, it becomes more of an overwhelming problem.
Since the early days of Washington's law, there have been prosecutions for physical attacks. In Seattle just this year, a man was found guilty of a hate crime for beating up a Somali immigrant cab driver and calling him a terrorist. But lately, there seem to be more high-profile hate crime charges for what people say rather than what they do. Which raises the question, what about someone's right to freely express themselves? University of Washington law professor Bob Gomolkiewicz says it's a question his constitutional law students often ask.
And even though the First Amendment, you know, when you just look at the words of the First Amendment, seems like the government can't regulate speech in any way, that's not really the case.
He says there are exceptions.
And one of the clearest cases where governments can regulate speech is in the case of a threat.
Gomolkiewicz says Washington lawmakers who crafted the hate crime statute tried to define what constituted a threat.
You know, when you get down to whether words are a threat, it just gets down to this test of whether there's a reasonable fear. You know, the person who's being targeted, do they have a reasonable fear that they're going to be harmed?
Still, he says, determining a true threat or reasonable fear is open to interpretation.
It really leaves it up to the context and to the circumstances.
And how much weight to give that context and those circumstances is what jurors who review all of the evidence, not just view media reports, ultimately have to decide. Paula Wissel, KPLU News.